With Labor Day savings at the Home Depot, good things come in pairs. Like a Samsung top-loading washer-dryer pair for just $6.98 each. Or a front-loading high-efficiency washer electric dryer pair, also $6.98 each. They're high capacity, so large loads are no problem. And right now, neither are smaller budgets. Up to 40% off appliance special buys now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, while supplies last. Gas dryer extra. See store for details. Valid through September 12th.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt. Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood chamber pressure increases.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Well, Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
And welcome to this very special episode of KSB AB Radio. With me, by force, is Carl Kafer.
Yes, and I am awake. Aren't you proud of me?
No, because you wanted the key to the cheese closet. And also lurking in the background on time is Gene. Hello, Gene.
Oh, how are you? I'm here. 20 seconds to airtime, and here I am.
Yeah.
We're blessed.
Thank you. TARDIS.
The one who brought us to this dance party, he's not here yet. Hopefully he'll show up or he's not wandering out in the woods again.
Who's that?
George.
George.
He wanders in the woods.
Well, what else can we say?
Well,
he's
I
not here.
Know.
Oh, there he is.
Hello there.
There he
Hello,
is.
Hello, George.
Can you hear me?
I think George showed up late because he's mad that I wouldn't play the love theme from Ice Castles as the opening of the show.
We're not live, are we?
Yeah, he's saving it for the shit hour, okay?
Oh, okay.
No, we're not live. We're recording this, and it's going to be played at a later date.
Gotcha.
And yes, we are
spoiled everything.
Well, his name is
Gene. Really like.
Kind of what he does.
Where's Eric?
Whoops.
Yes, I'm like the fart in the elevator.
Eric is not here.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's too late for Eric.
Hi, Eric, wherever you are.
But I'm here.
He needs a TARDIS.
Yes, and this weekend is going to be the Drive-In Monsterama. This is the first time you've done one that's just all one company, hasn't it been, George?
Yeah, I think so. I believe so, yeah. For the whole weekend, definitely.
Yeah. He's doing Hammer this weekend. I wish
we
I could see
Hammer
that, but life's gotten in the way, so hey.
Yeah, we did a Hammer night in, Gene probably remembers. I think it was the third year, maybe 2009. We did a Hammer night on a Saturday, but not a whole weekend.
No, it was with Vampire Lovers.
And you did
That's right, Vampire Lovers and Satanic Rites of Dracula and Seven Brothers Meet Dracula and Vampire Circus.
Vampire Circus.
Oh, man, that even kills me. I know I'm sad about missing Return of the Werewolf, but missing the Seven Brothers versus Dracula?
Yeah.
You didn't miss the Seven Brothers versus Dracula. You met the Seven Brothers and the One Sister Meet Dracula.
Well, I was with work. I was with Kevin today, and Kevin is putting together a little promotional booklet for the show, and it's a retrospective of all the of the shows that have happened, and he counted 201 films since the beginning.
No, that's impossible.
Wow.
That's what he says.
that's impressive,
201?
Guys.
I think that's impossible. Wait, so
who's good at math? Is anybody good at math? We have 12 shows.
Yes, I am.
And we have eight movies per show. So 12 times 8 is what?
It's 96.
Though it's 96, then he's wrong. But that's close to 200.
Yeah, by about half. Less than half.
Wait a second. You do two shows a year.
Oh, he's right. Yeah. Oh, we didn't take into account April Ghouls.
All right, but April Ghouls has not been for 12 years, though.
No, but the others we're at 96.
That's crazy. I don't know.
So we're at 96, right? And then we've done how many April Ghouls? Five or six?
Oh, geez. No kidding. wow, I'm like I think 2000. What was it? 2013.
6 times 8 would be 48.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
Right.
Okay.
48 and 96 is 144.
It's still
good at math. Carl's good
it's
at
nothing
math.
Nothing like that. Yeah.
It's a hell of a lot of movies.
Yeah.
At any rate.
That's a
good one,
guys.
Hey, it's Georgia's happening, and it freaks me out.
Ooh.
So anyway.
I know that quote.
I'm glad to be part of the freak out, baby. So, but it's going to be.
My favorite years is probably either the AIP night or the Paul Nashi night. Probably the Paul Nashi night. Because that was one I never expected in a million years.
Well, I didn't either. And I didn't expect it to pay off the way it did either. And I said to George, because he was really, with some pretty obscure films for the average drive-in monster goers, the Spanish horror films, and it was packed. And I told him that night, I said, my God, you've got a following that just doesn't give up. You know, it was a very pleasant surprise. It was a risk, and it paid off. It was beautiful.
Good.
Absolutely beautiful. Horror of the Zombies on the drive-in screen is one of the highlights for me of all of the, of all of the shows. There were specific films that he chose over 12 years that I felt were things that I would never have ever dreamed of seeing on the drive-in screen, and that was one of them, Horror of the Zombies.
And it's something
and
I wanted to show for a long time.
Trog. Hannah, Queen of Vampires. Psychomania. Shockwaves. Children
love
Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. Werewolf versus the Vampire Woman. I mean, so many films that I adore that I had the pleasure of seeing on the big screen, including Horror Party Beach last year, the two Dark Shadows films. It's been great. It's been one
well,
day after.
By the way, we're doing a Halloween mix of songs from horror movies. And you mentioned Horror Party Beach. I did pick the Del Airs.
Good for
that.
You.
Okay,
there is there's a documentary on the new Blu-ray with the surviving members of the band.
Which is 2/3.
How many is left?
I think it's two out of three, right?
I don't know.
Well,
yeah,
they were a trio, so I think they were a trio.
No, they were four.
Oh, they were.
There were four until they played Party Beach, and two of them were killed.
They were killed.
Yeah, they were killed at Party Beach by the monsters. Don't you remember?
I thought you were serious.
Oh, jeez.
No kidding.
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
Take some major risks.
It's an inside joke.
Son of Dracula.
Oh, screw you, Steven. I love Son of Dracula.
Son of Dracula was in the asshole
movie,
slot.
I love it.
Yeah, it was. It was in the asshole slot, right?
I think that movie defines the asshole slot.
Oh,
you know,
fuck you.
Invaders from Mars.
Now you're going into April
Fool's. People were leaving.
I wasn't aware that they did. So, you know.
Well, me and Doc were trying to go to the hotel, and they're like, traffic going out the drive-in.
I think you fall asleep, and then you wake up, and you're confused.
I didn't know there was an asshole slot until
two shows ago. That's from The Wonderful World of Steve.
Now, this Hammer one, it doesn't seem like you have any what I consider bad movies.
It was almost Moon Zero 2, but I couldn't get it, which would have fit perfect. I mean, for
exactly.
Some people, it would have fit that category.
So we had to cancel the Go-Go show, Go-Go Dance show with the Lunar Girls that we had hired for that. So, you know, it's never going to happen now.
Yeah.
Anyway. So what is...
Serious question to you, George, probably. Since the first one on Friday is Curse of the Werewolf, was Hammer the first one to really give Oliver Reed a shot as a lead?
Yeah, I believe so. He'd done a number of films for them in the late 50s and early 60s until he had more mainstream success. I mean, you know, people forget how many films he did for Hammer. It must be like a dozen.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are smaller parts, but I mean, from between like 59 to like 65, he made a bunch of them. You know, the pirate movies and Night Creatures.
Right.
And,
all good stuff.
Paranoia.
The Faces of Doctors. Yeah, Paranoia. Well, that's definitely one of his shining moments for them.
Well, for Paranoia. Me, it's These Are the Damned.
I was about to say that.
Absolutely,
extremely well done. Well, you mentioned that in the previous show, actually. These are the Damned. So, George, what movie out of this whole weekend, if you had to pick one movie per night that would be the movie that you feel is your favorite, what would those be?
Oh, that's tough. It really is tough. But if I had to pick one just because of... for a number of reasons, probably Scars of Dracula.
Mine's The Gorgon for Friday.
Yeah, I definitely, because Scars of Dracula is one I've been wanting to show for a long time. And the fact that I could show with Horror Frankenstein is nice.
So I'm thinking The Gorgon for Friday, and I'm trying to think what I would like the best for Saturday. I'm not sure. What I like for Saturday. I gotta give that some thought while we're
doing.
So
why don't you go through the whole gamut of films for close days?
What would be your favorite? You know them, Carl. What would be your two picks for the weekend?
I don't even know
mine.
What movies are being done, so they have to tell me.
Well, my favorite for Friday would be Curse of the Werewolf, and Saturday probably Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, because they took a risk on a movie. They couldn't go as far with it as they probably wanted to at that time.
Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde is probably the best of the movies on Saturday night as far as just being a really good movie.
It's well made.
It really holds up well. I mean, it's got so much going for it. It's, you know.
Some
of the other ones are not considered, you know, top tier. And they're, you know.
Why don't you give us the rundown on Friday and Saturday? That way I can answer the question.
Ice Castles. Yeah. Friday's The Curse of the Werewolf, The Gorgon, 1 million years BC, and When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth.
Okay.
Now, we got we also have, I mean, for the first time, we're showing a Ray Harryhausen movie.
Yep.
Which is nice. You know, people have been asking for Ray Harryhausen, something
for quite
we haven't
a while.
Dipped into.
Right.
So, not only do you have Hammer, but you have a Ray Harryhausen, and then you have another one, which is basically like a Harryhausen, but the effects by Jim Danforth, who did a spectacular job. When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth.
Right.
And by the way, 1 million years to be seen, When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth are the uncut UK versions.
Nice.
So as I've said before, it's the first time those two have ever been shown in their uncut form at a drive-in theater, and probably the last.
Together.
No, ever.
Oh,
really?
Experience.
Yeah, no, 1 million years BC and When Dinosaurs Ruled the Earth, when they played, they were, you know, the U.S. versions.
Yeah,
they've
exactly.
Played uncut at a drive-in.
Right, so we're doing some historical work with this then.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
You're trailblazing. Then Saturday we have Scars of Dracula, Horror of Frankenstein, which of course were a double feature back in the day.
In both
followed by
the United Kingdom and here in the United States.
Absolutely.
They were a package.
Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde, and the final film of the evening is Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, which I think is a really good film.
Oh, me too. I've always loved that film, too.
And I think that she's amazing in it.
Valerie Leon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, those two
yes.
were paired in the UK. They did play here, I believe, together. Not necessarily all the time. But AIP
right.
released those two films here, and they were cut to get a PG rating. So, again, our drive-in presentation of Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde and Blood from the Mummy's Tomb are the first time that these are being shown uncut at a drive-in in the United States.
Right.
Well, if I'm going to pick, now that I can pick, I'd say Saturday is Blood on the Mummy's Tomb because I've always wanted to see the uncut. Because I've only heard... I've heard so much about it being quite different than the American cut. And then I have to go with the Gorgon on Friday.
Yeah, I love the Gorgon. I think the Gorgon is just simply I talked about this on a previous show. I think the Gorgon has every single element of what makes a wonderful British afternoon film, like British horror film that you grew up watching on a Saturday afternoon. It has every single element.
That's what I
find having,
actually. It's Saturday afternoon.
Right.
TV.
Same here. And it has it has an all-star cast that is just unmatchable. And not to mention it has a monster. It has a spooky castle. It has people being killed. I mean, it's that classic plot line that was ironically repeated in a lot of episodes of Doctor Who. And of course, Patrick Troughton is in it. And it's just brilliant. It unfolds. There's so many Hammer films that actually have that sort of formula where there is this village and something's wrong and someone comes to investigate and they uncover this horrible curse or a mad doctor or just a local monster. It happens in Plague of Zombies. It happens in The Reptile. And the Gorgon kind of fits into that sort of independent Hammer monster kind of thing because it doesn't have Frankenstein, it doesn't have Dracula, it doesn't have a werewolf, it doesn't have a vampire. So it's sort of Hammer taking poetic license or dramatic license. What am I looking for here? And just going out there and creating this wonderful, this wonderful film. And I think the people are just going to love the Gorgon. They'll probably laugh at the special effects at the end, but that's okay.
Everybody always says that about that movie, including Christopher Lee, was quoted as being disappointed
right.
by it. But what you said, Gene, is exactly on target with that film. That was really well said because that's what it is. And it's a beautiful film to look at, directed by Terrence Fisher. And one of the, we only have two of the films were shot at Bray Studios, which was Hammer's the studio that they used in the early days up until 1966. So there's, you know, the look of the Gothics did definitely change.
It sure did.
You know. So these represent the earlier period of Hammer, those two films.
Yeah, there is a...
monster movie, Curse of the Werewolf and the Gorgon, takes what even today would be called a major freaking risk, which is they don't show the monster until basically the last part of the movie.
5 minutes.
Yeah, but the Curse of the Werewolf actually has three.
The
Curse of the Werewolf actually has three monsters in it.
That's true, and I think, and
yeah,
I think
you don't
that
get to
I
see
think
a
that,
real werewolf in it with a good
yeah, but they have three monsters that make up for it. You have the horrible, horrible Marquis, played by Anthony Dawson, who was a kid, like terrifying to me. And then you have Richard Wordsworth as the beggar who is kept in the cell, and he becomes more and more decrepit, and he's so hairy he almost looks like a werewolf.
Right.
You know,
and
I mean, as a kid, this stuff was terrifying.
And I think also the two things here. Going back to the Gorgon, answering your commenting about the Gorgon, I'm fine with the Gorgon not being showed to the end because they keep going to the castle and they keep getting glimpses of her and being exposed to her and dying. So throughout the whole movie, you're never sure if somebody is actually possessed by her spirit, if she's in disguise as a human, if there is actually just a Gorgon, or, you know, is something else going on. You know, and there's so much that needs to be answered in that film, and any movie that has a monster lurking around corners and killing people or turning people into stone, and it just builds to the climax that it makes it, you know, it makes it really good. And you have what, one or two major characters that turn into stone in the film that you would never expect are going to be, you know, petrified. That throws you off. And as far as Curse of the Werewolf goes, the thing that I, as a child, loved about that movie was the makeup, because there had never been any kind of makeup for a werewolf done like that. He almost had like a bat appearance with the pointed ears and the way the head was shaped and stuff. And I thought as a kid, this is the best werewolf I've ever seen, and instantly gravitated to that design over the Universal Wolfman. I thought it was much more cooler as a kid, you know, than the black and white classic Universal film.
Well,
so,
yeah, nothing against
and I love Ben's
makeup, but Wolfman that makeup is extraordinary.
No, it is. You're right. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to poop on Universal here, but I'm just saying
no,
as a kid.
No, but like you said, it is terrific, and it's like
unique.
It's so unique, and it really. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when you're ranking like screen werewolves, it's up on the top as far as the look of the makeup. And Oliver Reed, he plays it great.
Yeah, he's good.
He's
okay,
really
guys,
good.
What I was saying
is
I love how in the Wolfman remake, when Anthony Hopkins' character, spoiler, turns into a werewolf in the film, it's pretty much a homage to Oliver Reed's look in Curse of the Werewolf.
Yeah, I think a few films kind of imitated that look. I mean, well, obviously there was another British film from Tyburn about 15 years later called The Legend of the Werewolf, which had Peter Cushing in it, which was, again, it was the same makeup guy, Roy Esch, and he basically did the same kind of design. It doesn't look as good as Curse of the Werewolf. And even in the Werewolf in the Monster Squad kind of looks like
agreed.
Trying to imitate that look.
Yeah, I think there'd be less of a lawsuit for that look than there would be for the Wolfman. So,
yeah.
Universal's pretty tight
well,
about that
Jack
image.
Jack Pierce and Beauty and the Beast. His makeup
oh,
was
yeah, that.
Just like the Wolfman.
That's very true.
That's true. That's a film that I saw a long time ago, but it seems to have disappeared, or it's just strangely ignored now. But I remember it being really enjoyable.
What film's that?
The Beauty and the Beast from the 60s with Mark Damon, where it had the Jack Pierce makeup.
Yeah,
so
it's not really around, is it?
No, it's, you know, it'll probably get re-released on
Like Legend of the Werewolf.
DVD, one of these.
There's another rare werewolf.
It's a United
film.
Artists film, so it's likely in the MGM library, and it'll show up, I'm sure, one of these days. Legend of the Werewolf, too. That's kind of. There's been rumors that somebody's going to be releasing in the future, but like I said, it's just rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on home video.
So I have a question, guys. Okay. So you're doing Hammer Nights. I was just wondering, you know, all these are horror films. Did you consider maybe doing, like, splitting it up and doing, like, some sci-fi or some of the lesser-known Hammer, or might that be an idea for a later show?
Absolutely. We were saying before, I thought that I had a line on a print of Moon Zero 2 from Warner Brothers, and I was going to throw that in there, and that definitely fits the bill. But it wasn't available. They said they didn't have it. At one point, the thing is, they did say at one point that they did have it, and when I asked them again, they said they don't have it. So, you know, there's some confusion there. But the bottom line is, the film wasn't available. So these are like these are basically stuff that became available. And,
right. Recently,
you know,
as well, from Studio Canal on Blu-ray.
Yeah, the whole night on Saturday were all recently
released.
Re-released for theatrical showings in the United Kingdom and in America through Studio Canal. So, which is nice to see that they're doing something with their Hammer.
Finally.
Property. Yeah.
Right.
And another one they have available is To the Devil a Daughter.
Yeah, that's a good film.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I could show in the future. You know, we'll see.
So the question came up for me. Is there a movie I know you wanted to do Moon Zero 2, but is there a movie that you really wanted to show, or a favorite that you think should get more airplay and screen time? A favorite of either yours from Hammer?
Ice Castle.
You know, I can't think of too many because we've shown a lot of them over the years.
Plague of the Zombies and the Reptile.
Yeah, Plague of the Zombies, which is, you know.
Those are studio products, so maybe they'll put those out later, too.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they'll be. They were available to screen in the United Kingdom. I don't know.
Well, I could tell you one that I would love to see on the big screen, which I've never seen. And that's Captain Cronus.
Yeah, that's
I'd
another one. I'd love to show. I mean, I know Paramount had a print of it a long time ago, but apparently.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's another film that.
I know it played the film form in New York back in the. I'd like to say like the 80s, maybe the early 90s, and. You know, that print, God knows if it was even in playable condition.
It was probably
then.
Early 90s, because if it was 80s, I would have gone.
Yeah. Sometime, I can't remember. I did play, and I didn't get to go. It actually was like on a double feature with Near Dark or something like that. So.
Wow.
It was like, yeah.
Nice.
But the film is elusive as far as trying to get a DCP or a print of it to show.
Wow. Yeah, I think that, and I wouldn't mind seeing Quatermass in the Pit. That was a very influential film for me when I was a kid from Saturday afternoons. One of my favorite Hammer films to this day.
I think it's one of the greatest sci-fi films of the 60s.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that could be an A, Quatermass Night.
And even down to the very even down to the very end of the movie where the energy, you know, the Martian intelligence manifests itself as a giant horned devil or grasshopper alien, whatever, Martian. As a kid, when I saw that movie, The two things that stuck in my mind were when they broke into the capsule and you first see the Martian grasshoppers, and then they start rotting that was one of the things that stuck in my mind as a kid. And then the very end with the giant energy, the manifestation of the psychic power. And it haunted me for years. I saw it as a kid, really didn't know that much about the movie. I mean, and we're talking 7, 8 years old, maybe even younger. And then years later, then I knew what it was. You know, and mostly probably from Famous Monsters of Filmland. But, you know, those were that was definitely a movie that I saw on Saturday afternoon as a kid repeatedly that I thought was just tremendous, you know. And it shaped my whole concept of you know, of sci-fi is what it did, you know. It's very influential. So
another
yeah,
one
like
of my childhood favorites of Hammer's that I would love to show, and it, I don't know if it's necessarily a popular one, is The Lost Continent.
I love that. That's another movie.
I absolutely adore that movie. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies that fascinated me ever since I saw it, and it was like I watched it every time it was on TV, and it used to be on TV.
I agree.
Alive.
I saw that on the CBS late night movies the first time
I
saw that.
Yeah, that's when it first showed. Yeah.
Stayed up late and watched it, and they kept showing in the commercial. They kept showing the sea monster, the seaweed monster that was down inside that ship, and you know, that whole sacrificial thing really flipped me out as a kid. These people being thrown into this wacky monster. Now today, it doesn't hold up in terms of the special effects, but it's still really scary. I think anyway, you know.
I don't know. Out of the Canal Plus DVDs that Anchor Bay put out, The Lost Continent is the one that goes for the most out of them.
I didn't know that. Well, you know, it's a very surreal film because it was studio bound, and you know, it's just weird. You know, they built these giant sets with these the Sargasso Sea and these giant crabs and lizards and stuff. Or it's a giant crab and what, a cricket, like a cricket or a scorpion. And it's just weird. It's just a weird movie. It's, you know, because it's I think the majority of it, except for what, some of the footage on the boat was all inside a studio.
Yeah,
so,
it was a studio. It was actually one of Hammer's most expensive movies. And I think some of the guys
right.
that did the special effects had worked for Disney, which is unusual
yeah.
for them to get people like that.
Right, right. And it was just weird. You know, it's just a strange film. And I know a friend of mine watched it, and he wasn't impressed by it. He thought it was pretty funny. But then I said to him, you know, you need to look at it from the technical aspect of this movie. How much money went into this and the makeup and the animatronics and stuff for what, 1967? And
yeah, it was
shot
in 67, yeah.
Right, so it that's pretty impressive stuff right there. And it's a really fun movie for kids. Again, it's the type of thing that George and I watched as kids that just thrilled us to death. It was like, oh, my God, Lost Continent's on. You know, got to watch
it
again.
It. And it's got a great cast. I mean,
oh, it sure does.
It's not like your typical. I mean, you have. I think you have Michael Ripper in there as like, you know, got a small part as one of the ships. You know, one of the guys on the ship.
Right.
But for the most part, it's like it's not the typical Hammer cast. They got this American actor Benito Carruthers, who was in The Dirty Dozen and
a few
movies. He passed away fairly young and. What, Hildegard Neff, who was, Hildegard Neil, I think her name is, she's a German actress.
Yeah.
She's like running away because she did some kind of, she was involved with some politician or something, and they took her son. It's like, it's got all these, they're all misfits on a boat. Tony Beckley plays an alcoholic piano player. And then, like, midway through the beginning, he decides he's going to, like, quit but alcohol. And I mean, it's like a bunch of, it's been called Love Boat on Acid by some people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And then throw in a strange.
They ask Harry, this goes to defend the Gorgon. They ask Harryhausen, when he made Clash of the Titans, what was the hardest thing to animate? He said the Medusa.
because you had 33 different, you had about 20 moving parts on that. And that's if you didn't
I'm sure.
trip on the snakes.
I'm sure. Yeah,
and
I bet it was.
Wasn't The Lost Continent one of the first of the three Dennis Wheatley books that Hammer adapted?
Yeah, I think maybe Devil Rides Out was maybe for that, before, right before.
Like, no, it was, the first one was The Witches.
Was The Witches based on
The Devil's Own, wasn't that a Wheatley book?
I don't think so, no.
I thought it was, but it was 66.
I'm pretty positive that it was just Lost Continent, The Devil Rides Out, and
The
Devil's
Daughter.
I'm going
to Google that.
It was just those three.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then to The Devil's Daughter, which Wheatley, like, you know, really was upset about.
I'm looking right now.
No,
that's another movie then, The Witches. There you go. That's great, right?
Well, that's another one. Again, that was like a Saturday and Sunday afternoon favorite.
Yeah.
And if I put that on, that's when I like to watch it. You know, it just brings me back to being a kid. And that opening, you know, there's an opening with Joan Fontaine where she's in Africa and these like voodoo guys come in her hut. It's scary stuff.
Really weird.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm looking. Yeah, it wasn't. The movie was by. It wasn't Wheatley. It was. Hold on a second here. Of course, the internet wants to default to the other witches from Jim Henson. Of course. I forgot. Yeah, Nigel Neal did the screenplay. And it doesn't say who it's based on. Hold on a minute. I'm trying to see. It's that whole formula of a small town that appears to be normal, but something sinister is going on. Somebody shows up, becomes involved in the plot, and it unfolds. And, you know, there were several of those sort of witchcrafty kind of movies that were out back then, you know, like Night of the Eagle, Burn, Witch, Burn,
mm-hmm.
The Witches. There was another one. Wasn't there another British witchcraft? Oh, yeah, Curse of the Demon had a similar plot.
And Witchcraft with Lon Chaney, I think you can throw in there.
And that's another. That is a beautiful film, and that is one of the most underrated films ever is Witchcraft. That is phenomenal.
The thing about Witchcraft is, here's a movie that was made in 1964, and this is when all the British gothics are in color, but that one is shot more inexpensively in black and white, and it works beautifully in black and white.
Yep, it's gorgeous.
You know?
And it was a movie that I don't remember seeing as a kid, and I may have actually first saw that film when it was available on VHS or DVD.
Yeah,
I had
gotten a bootleg because I don't remember that ever being on TV that much.
No, it was never on television.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. No, it was most likely a bootleg copy. Maybe it was put out by one of the studios, Midnight Films or whatever it was called. What was the name of the one company used to put out all those bootlegs? I can't remember the name of it.
You're right. There was a million of them. There's Midnight.
Might have been Midnight. I can't remember the company that put that out. But
yeah. Midnight Cinema.
It was such a pleasure.
To be on Lost Continent. I got to show that. I think that trailer needs to be shown at this during this weekend.
I agree.
Yeah.
I do have the trailer, so I haven't pulled it out in a while. So we got to do that.
Yep, absolutely.
I'd say Dennis Wheatley triple feature, but I would say To the Devil a Daughter would probably fit more with the 80s crowd and you putting more like R-rated films on that.
The first time that I saw that movie, the first time I saw that was on HBO actually, and I didn't like it at all. I was not a fan of it. It wasn't until
it was on HBO, huh?
HBO ran it. Yes.
You remember
back
what
in 19,
year?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Around
I remember
what year?
That.
Yeah, 79 or 80.
That's what I saw it too.
Oh wow, I don't remember. That's about the time I got HBO. Maybe it was right before I got it.
Before we're done with the show,
it's funny that it was already playing on HBO because it was actually also it was double featured with Dawn of the Dead in 79 in some areas, even though it had been out 3 years, but some places showed that with Dawn of the Dead.
I'm looking right now to see if I can find it.
It was re-released to cash in on Cat People, which was another film that had Natasha Kinski as a star.
Right. I'm trying to see if it pops up here on the internet while we're talking as to what year it was on HBO. It was definitely on HBO, and I didn't like it that well at the time, and mostly because the movies that were trending at that time were not something that was similar to The Devil and Daughter. So I just didn't like the movie. I was underwhelmed. Is that the word I'm looking for?
If I remember correctly, because I saw To the Devil and Daughter on HBO, and we had HBO from 72 on. If I remember, it was like 78.
Yeah, that might have been it.
That would make sense, because I probably didn't have HBO until like 79, so that would make perfect sense, yeah.
Because I think I was a junior in college when I saw it. And I know I saw it first on HBO.
Yeah, I did too. I think that there's a, I know for a fact that there is a HBO, somebody has scanned a lot of the old HBO guides, and they're available on the internet. You can find them, because I actually looked up, HBO was the first place I saw Halloween, and it was also the first place where I saw Stranger in the House, a.k.a. Black Christmas, Silent Night.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
Evil Night, and... Yeah. I didn't see it when it, I guess it ran on, did it run on the CBS late night movie maybe? I saw it on HBO, and it ran, and we talked about this on another show, I think. It just ran, like in the whole guide, HBO guide, it was only on one night, and it was on a Friday night, and my mom and I stayed up and watched it. It wasn't HBO now and then would, if they were getting a movie, say, the next month for a full run, they would just randomly toss this movie out there, you know, for one night or two nights, and that's exactly what it was. And I was blown away by it, you know, really blown away by it. And that's another movie that is in my top 10, possibly in terms of horror films, my second favorite horror film of all time. And next to Halloween, and, you know, I owe HBO for both of those films, because I didn't have anybody to go see them with in the theater. And they were on there relatively quick. Now, not so much that movie, but Halloween, the turnaround for Halloween on HBO was pretty quick. It was, what, like a year or 2 years? It was real fast.
Yeah, same with Dawn of the Dead.
Now, right. I saw Black Christmas on HBO, but it was in the early 80s, so they must have started showing it again like a couple of years later.
It was in 78 when I saw that, for sure, because we got HBO in 78.
When I saw it, it was probably like, I'm thinking 80, 81, 82, something like that, but it was definitely HBO.
I saw Phantasm on there, too, for the first time, I think. Or no, I saw Phantasm in the theaters, but I saw it for the first time on TV on HBO.
And HBO, another one I saw for the first time was Massacre at Central High.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Assault on Precinct 13.
Yeah.
By the way, you understand what HBO stands for, right?
Home box office.
Nope. Hey, Beastmaster's on.
Oh yeah, that's too.
That's true. They ran that into the ground.
The comedian from Soap.
Crystal.
Billy Crystal, he made a joke about Billy about in one of his stand-up things about Beastmaster being on HBO all the time. You know, it's funny that you say that, because he singled that out, you know, the movie that was on HBO.
But, I mean, that's been a joke for years and years. And maybe it did come from Billy Crystal. But damn, I remember that time frame. It was on like every freaking night.
Yeah, it was like the Beastmaster channel.
I actually
another movie
found,
I know it'd be on HBO all the time was Super Fuzz.
I found on HBO, listen, this is great. I made a post on Facebook, and I actually researched it, and the first night that movie ran, It was a Friday night, which is amazing. I remember that. Stranger in the House aired on HBO Friday, November 16th at 1 a.m. in the year 1979. That was the first time it ran.
And you got to stay up and watch it.
I got to stay up and watch it, yeah. And the thing, it was amazing because it ran that one night and then it didn't come back on HBO for like another month or two and then it was a full run. So,
and
this one of those movies you
tripped across. The reason that Halloween and Dawn of the Dead showed up so quick on HBO is they paid them an unprecedented, for the time, $300,000.
I don't think Dawn of the Dead was ever on HBO.
For the rights to show them. Halloween
I don't remember
was,
Dawn of the Dead on HBO either.
No, that was never on HBO. There's no way that was on
HBO.
Yeah,
I guess it was. They paid about $300,000 and they for about 30 movies of it.
Oh, yeah.
Dawn of the Dead was on HBO.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't
think. They only had like 30 showings and they could only show it after midnight, but yeah.
I sort of feel that it was and it wasn't, but I'm going to have to fact-check that and see what the dates were on that. It's a very good possibility that it was. I saw Scanners on there for the first time, too.
Well, yeah, that was on.
And The Brood.
Uh-huh.
So, two more movies. Well, I want to sidetrack from the HBO thing here because we kind of got away from the, which is fine, from the show. I wanted to give you guys some updates on this is on the page on Facebook. Coming back this year for specials at the drive-in, courtesy of Todd and Emma, we're going to be having hot sausage sandwiches and Halouski again this year. Those are going to be two of the specials
Hammer
for the weekend.
Halouski.
Hammer Halouski, yes. Scars of Halouski.
Yeah.
Halouski of Dracula.
I know a couple of people that probably wouldn't show up if they didn't have any Halouski.
Well, they're going to have that again, and they're doing the hot sausage sandwiches again. So those will be two of the specials because they sell very well in the fall, and as well as all their other their wonderful snack bar foods. So please, if you come out to the show, support the Riverside Drive-In and the snack bar. It's important. We'll be doing the group photo ops for each night. I'm not telling you anything about them.
I don't even know about them.
Doesn't that make it great? George is working on the baskets, or the baskets are done.
I'm working on the baskets.
He's working on the baskets. So
one of the baskets is done.
We don't have a social life, so we do nothing but work, he and I.
Yeah,
and
true.
And we have like 5 minutes to poop and make baskets at night. That's it.
It's true. It's really true.
Poop baskets.
Poop baskets. They will be given away during the shit hour.
No. Before.
God.
Not this year.
God.
It's the shit. It's the asshole slot.
But what comes out of the asshole slot?
That's
shit.
That's what Steven affectionately called it.
That was a term for if they had like a triple feature or a four, they would pick the worst film to show at the last slot. Right, Carl?
Absolutely.
Let
me put it this way. The shit spot was a movement way before you guys started it, okay? It just took a long time to come out.
Oh, and pierogi pizza's coming back. I forgot to mention pierogi pizza is coming back, too.
By the way, I had a thought, and I don't know if you can do it this weekend or not. But, you know, you're doing the Hammer movies. You should have a special on popsicles. That way you have Hammer and Sickles.
That's funny. Yeah, well, they have popsicles there. I don't know how well they're going to sell during the show, but because it might be cooler. Of course, the weather here in western Pennsylvania has been so unbelievably bizarre. I don't know what we're going to be dealing with for that weekend yet. Probably
it's the same
cold
New
nights.
Jersey, too. We got the same shit where, like, we might get it a day after you, but it's been weird.
It's actually
crap.
Pretty cold here right now. It went down. It dropped down and the Pittsburgh area into the 50s last night, and I believe the same tonight, and it's clear out, and there was, like, zero humidity. And that's the way it was last night and tonight, and it will be tomorrow. That is exactly what I would like to have for Monsterama. I don't want it freezing cold, but I don't want it hot and humid. I would like to have just a little chill in the air, and that's what really makes Monsterama special. If it's just a little cold, you know, like a cool summer night, nothing freezing. So hopefully that's what we're gonna have to go with to go with our movies this year. So get them witchcraft
books. I think it's interesting that you're playing two of Hammer's most famous, really double features. On Friday, it's the two dinosaur movies, which I remember were shipped out together after they played their separate runs. And of course, Horror Frankenstein and Scars of Dracula was the first time that Hammer tried to experiment with going for a younger, more 70-ish crowd.
Yeah, that's very true.
Which one was that about?
Scars of Dracula, Horror Frankenstein was then going... trying to go for a younger crowd, which is why
with them bringing in a new Baron Frankenstein and stuff.
Right.
It's probably like one of like the Hammer fans' most hated movies, but
why? Horror Frankenstein? I think it's very tongue in cheek, and maybe that's part of the reason.
I find it very enjoyable, so I don't care.
I think maybe that's the reason why some people are disinterested in it, because it was a dramatic departure from Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee into a whole new younger cast, and it was played a little tongue in cheek at times, you know.
I think the Hammer fans that don't like stuff like Horror Frankenstein can't appreciate like say I don't know Frankenstein's Daughter or Lady Frankenstein. I'm just saying
right.
It's like if you like fun Frankenstein movies that are a little offbeat, a little not everything's got to be James
right.
Whale or right. Terrence Fisher. Just
right.
lighten up, And
right.
plus,
it's
well at a drive-in, I think those films definitely, Scars and Horror definitely are better suited to a drive-in than, like, a Palace Theater, so.
Absolutely. And we're going to have Creepy Classics back, of course. Ron Adams and his crew, I believe, should be there and selling their magazines and DVDs and Blu-rays and T-shirts, so.
Balloons, floats, and.
Yeah.
Appearance
balloon
by Santa floats. Claus. We have balloons, floats, and Santa Claus.
I can't wait.
What?
Yeah, and if you're a monster kid and you still collect DVDs and stuff, Ron usually has the best selection of the old-timey stuff you're going to find.
One of our dinosaurs is missing. There you go. There's
I saw that in
the
movie
film.
Theater.
I did too. Oh my God, it was genius. So, but it was sort of that period, briefly when Walt Disney was fairly cool. There was a period
all those
where
live action things that they did. Yeah.
Yeah, like Island at the Top of the World, and which is a really fun movie to this day. And the Castaways. What was the one called? Something on the Castaways that was. There was a Castaways movie too, wasn't there?
I like the
comedy
stuff. I liked the Love Bug movies and the Boatniks and that kind of nonsense.
The Boatniks was fun. Moon Spinners. Haley Mills. Everybody loves Haley Mills.
Uh-oh.
My God.
Okay.
Super Dad
has
Mop
Headache. Headache.
What you don't like Haley Mills?
Oh, I can't stand that shit.
Oh, I like
a really good
okay.
Haley Mills.
Let
movie.
Me tell you why.
Deadly
Let me tell you
Strangers.
Why. Okay.
Well, what is it?
Deadly Strangers with Simon Ward and Haley Mills.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Is that the movie where she smokes and stuff and she's grown up?
Yeah. Well,
what was the name of the movie where she's a bad girl? Is that
it? The Twisted Nerve? I mean, she did a few.
Yeah,
movies.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what
like
it is.
Carl, tell
there.
The story. Now tell the story why you hate Haley Mills, Mr. Kafer.
It's not Haley Mills. It's Disney at that point. Okay, I think I'm a bit older than you guys. So when I was 7 and 8 and 9 and 10, you're in the mid-60s, okay, to the early 70s. And invariably, my parents would leave me off at this theater that played nothing but Disney. And I hated it. And I tried to tell my folks, don't send me to go see the Boatniks again. No, you go. You know, and it's like, oh, that mid-period, I just could not stomach as a kid.
Right,
so
I hear you.
I'm not there with you.
Yeah, that's why that Joe Dante movie Matinee, they kind of spoofed that whole idea of Disney movies.
Oh, shopping cart?
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
In hysterics.
I mean, that's quite brilliant, actually.
I was literally in hysterics with that.
Yeah, that is a brilliant spoof of what it was like through some stupid Disney movies.
Was called In Search of the Castaways. It's listed as a fantasy sci-fi film with Haley Mills and Wilfred Hyde Wright. They're the biggest cast members, and I remember that. I think it was 1962. Obviously, I didn't see it in theater because I wasn't born.
Well, they would
just
keep bringing them back every year. You know, when I was in the
70s,
the movies
were I'll tell
you
the one that I saw like about five times in a row.
Carl?
And that was I'm sorry. Sorry.
What's wrong? They played every year, like Saturday and Sunday only, and that was it. Right, George? Is that what you're saying? They were just
I had like a local theater that would do different Disney double features every week, and my mother took my brother and I as kids to see like every one. So we saw, and it would be usually like an animated thing like Cinderella. With one of the live action ones, like the Gnomobile and Darby O'Gill, all those, Trap, all of those things.
Carl loves the Gnomobile.
Oh God, help me! The one I always saw was the computer wore tennis shoes. I think I saw that like six times.
Yeah, that's
another. And I hated it each time.
I remember seeing The Strongest Man in the World at the drive-in, which was a 70s thing with Kurt Russell. And
Kurt Russell was in a lot of those movies.
Yeah.
The Dexter Riley films, Computer War Tennis Shoes, The Strongest Man in the World. And I think there was a third one, but I'm not sure.
Huh. Well, but I don't remember the name of it. But there were those slubber films. So, right?
Yeah. Ant the Money Professor Flubber,
Son of Flubber.
And Son of Flubber.
Right. Yeah, those two. So,
I like. Those I like. You saw those at the drive-in. I like those.
And then it all came crashing down with The Last Flight of Noah's Ark.
And then Ice Castle happened.
Yeah, Ice Castle.
But it wasn't a Walt Disney film, Butcher in the Woods was, right?
That's true, yeah.
And that was another film. I talked about this on another show. There was a weird period where Disney tried to be hip, and then they disassociated themselves with the productions. There was Black Hole. I think they did Black Cauldron as well.
Yeah.
They did Watcher in the Woods. They did, the other movie?
The Return to Oz.
And the Gumball Rally.
Yeah, that's exactly, Return to Oz and Candleshoe with Jodie Foster. That just disappeared off the face.
Too, yeah.
That just disappeared off the face of the planet. And briefly, Anchor Bay put all of those out, including Island at the Top of the World. They all came out from Anchor Bay. And Disney had, like, no interest in putting the films out. I don't know why, but they didn't at the time.
Well, you know, the other one you forgot is Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah, there you go. That was another one.
Yeah, I saw that in the movies, too.
But you never knew I saw two.
That when Anchor Bay put Something Wicked This Way Come out, they begged them to let them put the alternate cut out. And Disney's like, no one cares about it.
They
kept upping their offer of cash to get to that print, and they were like, no, we don't want your money. We just, no, you're not going to put it out.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, the thing about that cut is the guy who directed it, I can't think of his name right now, and the script was by Bradbury. The original cut was an R-rated film.
Right. Well, I know people that didn't want to go see the movie because it was Disney. They thought that the association of Disney with the film was something that wouldn't it wouldn't appeal to them. And then they went and saw it, and it was unlike other things that Disney was doing. You know, again, Disney venturing off from their formula and doing something kind of hip and unusual to compete with the movies that were coming out in that time period. You know, then something happened. I guess it was, you know, that their Little Mermaid or whatever, and then they started going back to this formula crap, and that's all that they've been dumping out for years now, at least in my opinion. I don't have a real high opinion of Disney. Pixar, I do. Disney, I don't.
To get back on subject, why do you guys, especially you, George, think that of all of the films that Hammer's done, the Mummy films of theirs are the ones that seem like the fans give the most disdain to?
Well, I think because the first Mummy movie, you know, of course, Terrence Fisher directed it, Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing, is, like, really highly respected. And then, much like the Universal Mummy sequels, they kind of get written off. Curse of the Mummy's Tomb and The Mummy's Shroud, I mean, it's like fans are usually on the fence which one is worse. But I see that it seems, from what I've seen, at least as of late, most Hammer fans are, like, at least accepting of them, that they're, you know, they are what they are, and they're kind of fun. And then the last one that we're showing, Blood from the Mummy's Tomb, is just totally different. It's a total unconventional mummy film based on Jewel of the Seven Stars by Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
Not really a classical mummy film, but...
But didn't that get remade with Charlton Heston as...
Yeah, The Awakening in 1981.
The Awakening, right.
Which was also on HBO a lot.
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Charlton Heston, too.
There was also a British television version before the Hammer film. I'm thinking like late 60s, early 70s.
I remember that, but I don't think
I've
seen it.
I've never seen it. I've seen pictures from it.
It probably doesn't exist
anymore. I think Isabel Black played the terror part. But I something I'd like to see, but I haven't caught up with yet.
I would like to point out too that actually, Curse of the Werewolf was requested by Tom Savini.
A few years ago, he requested it. So
yes,
yeah.
Weird Monsterama trivia.
Yeah, very true.
It breaks my heart that Curse of the Universal, instead of actually doing their things right, has basically put them on Blu-ray and DVD dump sets.
Right.
Well, what are we talking about?
The ones on that deserve single disc are Curse of the Werewolf, Night Creatures,
Bride
of Dracula.
The Blu-rays, Dan, that doesn't. I don't think they're. I think they're two on a disc.
They weren't individual. Are you talking about the DVD? You're talking about the set where you flip the DVD over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those
it came
those,
out.
Those have a lot of problems with them. So I'm glad I don't have to, you know, watch those anymore. Cause
yeah, I agree.
I remember having trouble with Curse of the Werewolf.
Yes.
I had trouble loading it in my computer to take to get screen grabs from. But
yep.
You know, with the Blu-rays, you don't have that problem. And plus, there's German editions of some of those Universal Hammer films available too, and British versions. Like you have a lot of options with those. On Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's so refreshing to really start looking at how much of the Hammer films are now out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and
they
keep releasing more, so.
Because they're so important.
Yeah. I mean,
but
if
this,
I want to
been
anything
totally
on Blu-ray, that's...
You've years ever since the DVD has begun, George, haven't you, on your website?
Wait, say that again?
You've been stumping for years on your DVD driving website to ask the studios to put their Hammer titles out?
Yeah, I just did it recently with the Studio Canal Hammer films, because they hadn't released anything, and this is you know, more for Europe, because they're not, they haven't released them in the United States, but at least they're out in Europe, and if you have a region free player, you can get them from England.
Absolutely.
So I did a campaign recently for them to put them out, for Studio Canal to put them out, and the 8 of the 9 films I was campaigning for, they put out in 2 waves, you know, just after that campaign. I don't know if I don't know if it's coincidence or but I did get a lot of people to, you know, write to them and
well, it can't
yeah.
hurt, right?
Yeah.
Very cool. Yep, that was a big announcement. George has a really good Hammer group on Facebook that people should join, and we should probably post the link to that on the community page.
Yeah, just search Hammer Horror on Blu-ray, and it's a Facebook group.
It's very good.
And if you aren't a big Hammer fan, one of those that are like, meh, they're too old, or meh, I like Universal better, you might want to go to the drive-in both of those nights, because you probably will be surprised at the depth of difference in quality of these films that he's picked out.
Yeah, this is a really big deal. This is a dream weekend. This is a dream show for George. It's something that I think he has wanted to do for years and was not ready to do or wasn't in the right place strategically to do it. And now at this point in the game, it really is something that, you know, it should happen. And I want to point out, too, that the feedback for the Hammer Weekend, except for maybe one person on the community page, has been very receptive. Huh? What's that?
I can say what I want.
Are you on Ambien again?
Oh! Nice!
He's been known to sleep, eat, and watch Dawn of the Dead on HBO when he takes Ambien. But anyway, it's just really funny that, you know, there really is a huge crowd of people that are into these films, and honest to God, you know, they're excited about it, and that's what we want to hear. You know, we know that we're not taking a chance with this and really going out in left field and saying, okay, you know, what is the regular demographic of Monsterama going to accept this or not accept this? This was something that we knew 100% from the beginning was going to be brilliant, you know. And George will tell you there has been a lot of sharing of the event to European, you know, European Facebook pages and stuff, and the European crowd and seems to be very enthusiastic about this. So this is not something that's just getting attention on Facebook for being, you know, in Pennsylvania. It's people around the world who are Hammer fans are taking note of this event. It's been noticed, and that's big. That is fantastic, you know.
Well, I remember that's the biggest crowd I've ever seen at Monster Bash for one of their outdoor movies is when he played 10 million years B.C.
Right.
10 million years B.C.?
He's on Ambien. Give him a break.
Oh, okay.
The one with Raquel Webb bikini.
The million-dollar B.C. duck?
Hey, don't diss Fred McMurray.
Fred McMurray? What the hell are you doing?
He was
My
in the
Three Dinosaurs? My Three Dinosaurs? Chip and Ernie were, I know that Ernie, I believe, was violated by a dinosaur and Chip was eaten. It was awful. And then that blonde woman, she, you know, she wore a, no, I'm kidding, the wife, didn't she wear like a fur two-piece bikini?
Okay, it's late at night, we're all punchy, guys.
Wow. I don't remember that episode.
I hated My Three Sons. I didn't like that show at all. Oh my God! Between Fred McMurray,
I watched
was,
some of them recently.
He was too old.
The early episodes. And,
he was too damn old. Fred McMurray was too old to have those kids, and Uncle Charlie was like a nightmare. So yeah, not a fan. No.
That show was on like 12 years.
Yeah, what a nightmare.
And it just
12
like
years of terror.
They kept, the cast kept changing. They kept, you know, and then one son left, and they replaced it with, then he adopted one, and then one of them got married, so then they had triplets. They did anything to bring kids into that house. Then he remarried Beverly Garland, and she had a daughter. You know, it was like, I think that was the original show where, you know, they did they just kept bringing, like, a young kid in. But they did it, like, 14 times, unlike, like, something like Family Ties, where, you know, you just, like, the ratings stick, that they have a baby, and then the next season he's 6 years old, you know.
I was just...
You know, Oliver on the Brady Bunch was not the first to do that, you know.
I was very emotionally disturbed by the opening credits with the hypnotic foot in the hands that changed the titles.
It's very, the early episodes are very surreal. There's some really weird, surreal episodes. I was like, plus you have like, William Foley trying to.
Which leads us to our next announcement that for April Ghouls, we're going to do My Three Sons Weekend.
That's right.
Okay, this has gone off the rails.
You find the lost episode where they come home and find Uncle Charlie in drag with the S&M hooker in leather.
Uncle Charlie and the girls, always is always forever. But anyway, so as I was saying about this show, when we announced it, you know, George announced it, and we started getting the feedback and stuff and seeing that it was being shared in European, you know, Hammer groups, and that these European Hammer fans were noticing this. It was, to both of us, that was like, wow, you know. They're saying that this show in America is, you know, it's this great thing, it's happening. So here's this little, you know, this little drive-in in Western Pennsylvania that's making the whole world notice it, and George is being noticed by, you know, Hammer films all over the planet. So that's a big deal to me. I think that's a fantastic accomplishment. Who knew, right?
Absolutely.
To be honest, this may be the first year I can say, y'all better show up early, because this might be sellout.
I think it's going to be a big crowd. I honestly do. There's a lot of what we're seeing trending through the questions and through the comments on the community pages. A lot of new people are coming this year, I think.
I'd like to say again, too, you know, we have, I mean, it is a Hammer weekend, but I like that I was able to do 1 million UCC and When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth, which showing something we really haven't before, and that's, you know, stop-motion monster movies.
With no English language.
No English. The first Monsterama films with no English dialogue, except some narration,
yes.
You know. So that's really... That's going to be an interesting thing to see how those films play out.
Well, they're good for kids too, and they're really.
Well,
kids.
I don't know, When Dinosaurs Rule the Earth. I mean that's why that's in that slot, because it is the.
A little racy.
It's a little. There's some quick nudity in there. It's.
Doesn't Julie Edge like show her boobies?
No, that was Creatures of the World Forgot. This is. But yeah, there is. Victoria.
Sorry,
in this case, it's Victoria Vetri.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, so it's going to be fine.
How much is it going to cost both nights?
The same as it always costs. George,
same as
you want to tell him?
Same as it ever was. No, it's $10 a person each night, and kids under 13 or under 12 are free with the
Right.
$10
so that,
for, like I've said before publicly, $10 for four movies at a drive-in, instead of $16 for one movie in a cramped Manhattan theater.
Priceless.
So you do the math.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
it's taking a little effort
this year.
What's that?
There's going to be candy in this year, right?
Candy? I didn't catch that.
campy.
Campy. Who's going to be campy?
Vincent Campy, the critic? What do you? I can't hear. Sean Candy? What did you say?
Campy.
Carl, translate
it. I apologize. Yes, of course.
We'll have Ambien, of course. So that's good.
No, there will be camping.
Well, the reason I ask is every time I'm always
will make me knock on Tom Savini's trailer and bother him.
I will. Did I do that last year?
Yeah. He didn't answer.
It wasn't Tom. It was somebody else.
It was in April.
But it wasn't Tom. It wasn't Tom. Tom was next door. When we went to find Tom for the photo op, we went to the wrong trailer. And they didn't. We heard like house music or something. Like it was a disco party.
Yeah, answered the door.
Right, and it wasn't Tom's trailer. So we don't even know whose trailer we were knocking on.
I think
so
it was
whatever.
Flo from Alice.
Here's Margaret.
She answered the door. And she invited us in for some cocktails. We said we couldn't. So
exactly.
You know.
She was out with JD at the VFW. Shoot! Anyway, she's my favorite character on Alice, by the way. After she left, the show just tanked.
Yeah, but, I just seen that episode where she left and they brought in Diana.
Yeah, it was on last night. Right?
Yeah.
Yep. We watch too much television in our spare
time.
You
do. I agree.
That's all we get to do. We don't have time for very much else except for pooping and doing radio
and
shows.
A half an hour show, yeah.
Yeah. And
are we 2 hours
late,
tonight? Is that what we're doing?
We're with an hour.
We're an hour
so
and a half.
Everybody, please come this Friday. And after the show is over and these guys leave, I want to play trailers for all of the films that are going to be shown this weekend.
Cool. That's awesome.
So thank
good.
You guys for being on, and everybody, please come out and support it because.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah, it'll be a lot
weekend.
Of fun. And thanks, guys, for coming on. It's always great to have you on.
This is the event of the year and not to be missed. You will never see this
Amen.
Lineup of Hammer films at the drive-in probably ever again in your lifetime. So don't miss out.
That's very true.
Absolutely. Well, love you guys. Thank you for everything.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you, George. Thank you, George, for... another wonderful opportunity to enjoy an evening at the drive-in.
I'm looking forward to this one like no other one.
I believe it. Me too.
Yeah.
Okay. And goodbye, everybody. Enjoy the drive-in.
All right, see you, kid.
See you at the drive-in.
Okay, bye. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
With Labor Day savings at the Home Depot, good things come in pairs. Like a Samsung top-loading washer-dryer pair for just $6.98 each. Or a front-loading high-efficiency washer electric dryer pair, also $6.98 each. They're high capacity, so large loads are no problem. And right now, neither are smaller budgets. Up to 40% off appliance special buys now at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only, while supplies last, gas dryer extra, see store for details, valid through September 12th.
Night one.
The curse of the werewolf that was laid on a baby who grew into a man possessed by a monster. To this Spanish town, the night brought drinking and dancing, music and girls, and the moon. The full moon. That turned an innocent man into a savage beast. The curse of the werewolf. A man possessed by a desperate need for love, who found in Christina all the passionate sincerity of youth.
Christina, do you love me? Will you marry me, Christina?
You say you love me, will you marry me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
Help! me! Get away! Get away! Get away! No!
Years BC erupts on the screen with volcanic excitement. 1 million years BC, when the earth parted and the mountains fell. When primitive man and monstrous beasts fought each other to inherit the earth. Since time began has the primitive scene been captured for the screen with such imaginative realism. Behold man 1 million years BC. Introducing the fabulous Raquel Welch, the sensational star discovery of this or any other year in 1 million years BC. See her as Loana the Fair One, who deserted her tribe and risked her life to follow Tumac of the Rock People. John Richardson as Tumac, as big and strong as the beasts he fought for survival. Nupondi the Wild One, whom no man could resist. See the fascinating, strange, and fearful creatures who roamed and ruled the earth 1 million years BC. The Brontosaurus, a moving mountain of flesh and bone. The pterodactyl, a flying reptile with giant teeth. The flesh-eating Allosaurus. The triceratops, a horned dinosaur in battle with the savage ceratosaurus. You will share the unending thrills and excitement of a world of primitive wonders, of primeval terror and savagery. You will indeed live in another world, in another time, as the centuries fall back to reveal the Earth 1 million years BC. Introducing the fabulous Raquel Welch as Loana the Fair One, John Richardson as Tumac,
when dinosaurs ruled the earth. This is the time, the very beginning, before man was master, when the moon wrenched a place for itself in the heavens. This is the time when men lived in fear, and the color of a woman's hair decided who should be sacrificed. Victoria Vetri, who could tame any man. Who could even train man's deadliest enemy?
Necro!
This is the time of unimaginable dangers. Danger from above, danger from below, danger from every living thing in this primitive world.
Every legend and myth known to mankind is not entirely without some truth. It was here, under a full moon, in the little village of Van Dorf, that an ancient legend suddenly, terrifyingly came to life.
Doctor, you'll perform an autopsy.
On a body that's turned to stone?
Megara.
It's said that when mortals looked upon her face, they were turned to stone.
Leave Van Dorf before it's too late.
What is it you're afraid of?
I'm afraid for you.
Or of what I may discover, if I remain.
We want you out of this house, mister. Now.
For 2,000 years, Megara the Gorgon had kept her evil peace. But now this strange, unearthly creature returns to petrify every human being who crosses her path. Starring Peter Cushing as the Doctor. Did his strange talents direct him to medicine or murder? Christopher Lee is the professor, confronted by a conspiracy of silence that paralyzed a village with terror.
Megara died 2,000 years ago. It's her spirit we're concerned with today. It's found a resting place in somebody.
Also starring Richard Pascoe, Barbara Shelley, Michael Goodliffe. The terrifying realism of the Gorgon. She comes to life and brings death to all those who look upon her face.
Carla! I am waiting for Carla, Mr. Hines.
And on night two...
Everyone knows there are two sides to the infamous Dr. Jekyll. By day, the man. By night, the monster.
Put a woman in your life, a good woman, and one day you'll wake up and you'll see a changed man.
Now, Hammer believe you too are ready for a change. An absolutely complete change.
This is the testament of Dr. Henry Jekyll. Male. Male. Male.
It's Hyde, isn't it? How is your brother?
He hasn't been himself of late.
This is the new Dr. Jekyll, the most evil woman you'll ever see. This is the sensuous Sister Hyde, the most evil man you'll ever meet.
Stay away from her. She means you great harm.
Why?
I just feel it, that's all.
Dr. Jekyll, Sister Hyde. Man or woman? Or both? In this film, you will actually see the sinister Dr. Jekyll change in mind and body into the totally evil Sister Hyde.
It is I who exist, Dr. Jekyll, not you. It is I who will be rid of you. Rid of you! Rid of you!
Hammer invites you to share the agony of a man whose body is possessed by a strange passion to murder and beyond.
They must be female, no more than 20 years old.
There will be a different kind of victim tonight. And then the tug of war will be ended between us. Fascinating situation, don't you think? It'll be interesting to see who wins.
Shrink from this eye, this all-seeing eye. Hide from these hands, these powerful hands. Run from the horror, the ultimate horror of Frankenstein. Prepare yourself for a new Frankenstein. Searing the screen with excitement. A young Frankenstein, experimenting with the forbidden secret of life itself, molding his most terrifying creation.
We're going to make a person. One of the first things we're going to need is the raw material. But fresh, mind you. Nothing more than 3 days old.
Anything I bring you will be so fresh, get past the government meat inspector.
Alice, she's my housekeeper. I hope she can cook.
People just aren't dying off so quick. It's the welfare state. That's what it is.
Frankenstein is back to raise the dead, to terrorize the living. The masters of suspense offer you a shocking bargain. your ticket entitles you to be frightened out of your wits. At no extra charge.
Him. Attack him!
This evil must be destroyed!
Help me! Put it down!
Burn down his citadel of evil.
You fools! You think you can destroy my master? The flames will never reach him!
He is evil. He is the embodiment of all that is evil. Is the very devil himself. Dracula's reign of horror reaches out even further.
Stop!
A winged creature of terror becomes Dracula's most fearsome new ally. Enter Dracula's stronghold at your peril. There is one way into his innermost sanctum.
Hey! Help me! Help me!
You will tell me everything! Tell me!
Oh, it was the hour! It's true, it was the hour! Gone away!
You must get away too. Now. One way in and no way out. There is no escape from the all-embracing evil of the humans who do his bidding. From the creature that extends his power, there is no escape, not even for the protected, from the scars of Dracula.
Take her with you. You'll do terrible things to her if you don't. Terrible things.
Buried here, shall henceforth have no name, shall cease to exist in the minds of man, as she has ceased to exist in life.
For thousands upon thousands of years, she lay there, perfectly preserved, in all her beauty, in all her evil.
Have her name, Kara.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Wear it always. Wear it now. Here.
Across the centuries to another time, to another place, she is back amongst the living to claim all that is hers.
You're going to kill me.
To threaten those who woke her from her eternal sleep.
Resurrection.
A rebirth for Terra. Complete control. Over life, over death. Who are you?
It was her, as large as life, standing over there.
No. It happened. You have to help me. You know its power. I have no mind left, no will.
In the name of Terra, she is back. To
destroy those who helped to raise her evil flesh and blood from the mummy's tomb.